If you would have asked me even 2 years ago about what the best field would be to get into, I would have said it's, you know, computer science, software engineering. I'm not saying I disagree with that statement at this point, but goodness, it's scary. It's scary to see the power of it. In my daily tooling, I use Copilot. I use Copilot X. And so I get access to GPT-4 that is the foundation, that has GitHub's fine tune on top of it. And so just seeing what it can do for the little things, like when I don't remember the one liner to auto capitalize the first letter in a sentence, being able to contextually ask things like highlight this code and say, hey, what does this do? Or hey, what's the time and space complexity of this? And what I found in experience is that those tools aren't there yet. Really what they require is, you know, iterative learning and like babysitting, right? It's like, hey, do this and then let me know when you're ready. And then, okay, we're going to take what you did there and then we're going to apply it here. And I think that really the future of software engineering is going to be working with AI.
Welcome to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast, where Justin Grammans and the team at Emerging Technologies North talk with experts in the fields of artificial intelligence and deep learning. In each episode, we cut through the hype and dive into how these technologies are being applied to real-world problems today. We hope that you find this episode educational and applicable to your industry, and connect with us to learn more about our organization at appliedai.mn. Enjoy.
Welcome everyone to the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. Today we're talking with Seth Uchuk. Seth is a full-stack software engineer with a passion for developing high-quality software solutions. He's had the pleasure of working with cutting-edge technologies and programming languages to build scalable and robust applications for a variety of clients and industries. He's also constantly exploring new technologies and methodologies to improve his skills and stay up to date with the latest trends in the industry. Today, as this is the Applied AI podcast, we'll be talking about his thoughts on artificial intelligence and their applications from the perspective of a full-stack software engineer. Thank you for being on the program today, Seth.
Hi, Justin. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. Yeah. So, you know, I gave a quick, you know, background, I guess, around being a full stack software engineer. Maybe you could give us a little, I guess, maybe fill in the color a little bit. I mean, how did you get to where you are today? What was your sort of path in your career?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I've got a little bit of a unique trajectory. I spent pretty much my entire 20s in business and business management and things like that. After the COVID pandemic and my wife and I getting the news of our first child on the way, I decided that it was time to do something different. So I went back to school for coding. I did a full stack web development boot camp. Gotcha. And then did a lot of self-learning on the nights and weekends on the side. And then after I was completed with that, you know, went through the whole application process, ended up getting hired on at Hypercolor Digital and started as a backend developer with them. Yeah, that's been just a phenomenal opportunity. You know, I can't say enough nice things about those guys. We have a list of clients that we work with. We're basically a boutique web application development firm, you know, similar to Lab 651. We get the opportunity to build all sorts of cutting edge stuff using new tech. And so we've got applications that are in the social media space. We've got apps that are in the healthcare space. We've got apps that are in like the farming space. So we get to do a little bit of everything and solve really cool problems. You know, so we work with AI. We code with AI. We've got projects that we're currently working on that are looking to integrate with AI. And so it's a really exciting time for us.
Nice. Yeah, we'll definitely get into some of the applications here. Which bootcamp did you go to? Was it one of the ones here in the cities?
No. So at the time, we actually lived in Texas. And so I went to the University of Texas one.
Sure. Cool. So yeah, so you went through this, what was it, like a 16-week deal or longer?
It was a 24-week full stack development. You know, started off, first week was just like the intro with like HTML, CSS, you know, stuff like that. And then let us get our feet wet with a little bit of vanilla JavaScript. And then moving into some of the like progressive things and how to integrate it all with, you know, jQuery and handlebars and things like that. And then really the remaining 2/3 of the course was just building projects using like MernStack, you know, doing React with either like MySQL or MongoDB and Node backends and things like that.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah.
So you must have been interested in wanting to get into tech at some point. I mean, did you program at all when you were little, or, you know, was it something that you just kind of a long lifetime passion of yours, or kind of come out of left field?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've always been a tinkerer, and I've been building computers, you know, for years, and I'm an avid video game nerd. So I've always been immersed in it. I've always tried to do stuff on my own. You know, I remember as a kid just coding up little simple things, little games and stuff like that. And yeah. So, you know, it's really just a dream come true of mine to be able to do this and get paid to do it now.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good. That's good. Changing careers, how do you think that maybe helped your perspective, I guess, you know, coming up with somebody who wasn't heads down, going through the traditional route? Do you think you have a different perspective or better perspective that you bring to the table?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I'm discussing a feature set with stakeholders or with the product manager or something like that, you know, being able to have the perspective of what they might be thinking from a business perspective, you know, and being able to kind of fill in those contextual blanks there, you know, that can be really valuable. And then just having that sort of opinion, you know, like when we're inside viewing an admin panel and discussing like, okay, well, what could we do with this? Or, you know, like even when I'm on the back end ideation side of things and I'm thinking about what kind of data the front end is going to need for this screen, you know, it's like, well, if I was this employee or if I was this manager, you know, I would be really worried about these metrics. And so I would want this to be front and center. Or like when we're doing our own tracking for analytics and stuff like that, it's like, okay, well, what would be valuable in this use case to track? Being able to have a little bit of reference there, you know, it just lets us be more efficient.
For sure. Sort of bringing that human element to it, which I feel is important in any software project, but even in particular when you start thinking about how artificial intelligence then is going to be applied to all aspects of business. You know, it feels like, you know, so AI has been kind of around for a long time, right? There's just kind of been these series of waves and sort of blips and interest in it. And then, you know, it didn't really do what we thought it was going to do, but it feels to me like, you know, now we're in this AI summer is what people like to say. It's gone through a series of summers and winters, and now we're in this sort of this AI summer. I guess, how did you kind of get into it? Was it more or less driven, I think, by your clients, or were you tinkering with it? You know, the big, you know, aha moment, I think, that we recently in the past year was, you know, around ChatGPT. How have you kind of seen this sort of play out over the past year?
We've been using machine learning in our apps for years, you know, for various use cases where it makes sense. But as far as like the glitz and the glam of it, where the stakeholders are excited and the clients are excited and asking questions about it, you know, that's really kind of increased in the past 12 months. And I think my personal opinion is just all of the news around ChatGPT specifically and the large language models and, you know, just being able to finally see something tangible for what machine learning and AI can do in a non, you know, educational sort of abstract manner where, look, it can just do all this sort of cool stuff. No expectations. Yeah. Just go play with it and see what you can do.
Yeah, for sure. So as someone who is, you know, kind of doing full stack, are you guys just leveraging on top of APIs and stuff that a lot of other companies have built?
Yeah. So in the past, you know, we've built our own models and done our own training and stuff like that. But we've got one project right now where we're working on a spam detection bot. And we are using the GPT-4 engine for that. So we're using the OpenAI driver in Node and communicating with their API that way.
Gotcha. Yeah, maybe you could talk a little bit about it. You don't need to name the client per se, but you guys have some sort of a site where people can put in email addresses. And I guess, you know, it's pretty easy to get a bunch of spam to come through this system.
Right. Yeah. So this is a sort of social media app where there's a public tracing comment section where you don't even need to have an email address. You can just anonymously post comments. And so as you can imagine, it's prone to some bot spam. And so, you know, it's pretty categorical for the types of spam that we have as far as, you know, like it's this kind of attack or this kind of phishing attempt and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's really easy to train and then retrain and handle drift and things like that.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think what I tell people is, you know, if you have humans doing work that they're, you know, it's neither monotonous, you know, or it's something that a human isn't good at, which is reading through a bunch of spam detections, those are probably specific great use cases to apply artificial intelligence to, right?
Yeah. So that's been a really exciting project that Andrew has been working on specifically. He's one of the co-founders of Hypercolor. And so he's been really deep in that one. And then the project that I've been working on is just kind of like a little pilot project for us to showcase to our clients for when they ask about AI. And so what I did was I built a little chatbot. And so similar sort of a backend where it's spun up in Node, and then we're communicating with the OpenAI API using their driver. And then what I'm doing is taking an initial prompt based on some inputs from the user, like, you know, what age do you want it to be? Do you want to give it a profession? You know, that sort of stuff. And then taking that, building that into a context prompt, and then sending that along. And then as the messages travel between the user and ChatGPT, I'm storing them in Mongo to be able to build up the context and then ship that context along as I want to. And so that's just kind of like a showcase as to, you know, this is a way that we can build on top of ChatGPT and kind of, you know, fake it as a foundation model and just to kind of showcase the power of how specific you can get for a use case by just modifying things like the prompting and the temperature and the token length and the penalty for, oh, what's that called? I can't think of the keyword. The reusability penalty. That's not the correct word, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I know. If anyone starts playing around in the playground, there's all those little sliders and stuff like that you can play around with, right? Inside the OpenAI playground. You're showing how to fine tune a model without actually having to go through a lot of the fine tuning. You're prompting. You're basically using the additional prompts and to give it context as you continue to talk to this chatbot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Because, you know, OpenAI doesn't really, especially through the API, people kind of think when you go to chat, you know, that OpenAI and you start playing with ChatGPT, you know, it actually is pretty good about doing this, sort of keeping the context flowing, but they're doing that under the covers through their system. When you deal with their API, right? There isn't really context. It's more or less a fire and forget, sort of a one-time thing. So you need to sort of keep the prompt going within the conversation.
Yeah, you know, and I would guess the simplest way for me to explain the backend for how that was built is that it's a simpler version of like the LangChain package, if you're familiar with that, where it's got all these different prompts built in and all these different adjustment parameters that you can give to it. And, you know, I think what that's doing under the hood is eventually it's building up all those prompts and formatting it and then sticking that into the, you know, OpenAI driver.
Yeah, for sure. What's sort of a day in the life? This is one of the things that I like to ask people, sort of what's a day in the life of a person in your role?
Sure. So, you know, my day-to-day job, which I've spoken a lot about, is with Hypercolor. And so, you know, wake up with the kids early in the morning, shuffle them off to daycare, and then work on the various client apps. I would say throughout the day, you know, 80% of the time I'm working on something backend related. So a lot of it is either, you know, architecting a new feature or doing some maintenance or, you know, handling a little bit of tech debt, you know, building an endpoint, whatever it may be, handling a ticket. And then I would say the other 15% of the time would be front end work. And then, you know, the remaining 5% time is meetings. You know, we pride ourselves in having as little meetings as possible so that we can all be efficient and get work done. We're a fully remote company, so we all work asynchronously. And, you know, that's worked out really well for us so far.
Cool. Yeah. How'd you find Andrew and people at Hypercolor?
So it's actually kind of a funny story. My father-in-law works with a project and the former owner of that project is in the same Slack channel as Josh. And so when I was looking for a job through networking, I was able to communicate with Josh and ended up interviewing with them. So yeah, my nighttime position is that after the kids go to bed, I'm a co-founder and CTO of an application program that we are building together with the owner of my kids' daycare.
Oh.
And so it's a total daycare management app where parents can communicate and message with each other. The employees can log in and post activities to the kids in the classroom to keep parents updated throughout the day. There's full billing integration with Stripe. There's like employee clock in and clock out management, children check in and check out management. And then the other thing that we'll be building soon after we get the launch done is we'll be building like an AI assistant that'll have public API access to the back end to where it'll be able to help the employees post activities and stuff like that, where it'll be able to do some voice to text transitions and save activities and things like that. The whole idea is to just build a better mousetrap and, you know, keep away from technology taking over our lives, right? Let the employees focus on teaching the kids at daycare and not having to be micromanaging an app 24/7.
Yeah, totally. It just feels like you got that little entrepreneur side of you as well, right? You're always sort of thinking about another business or other technology to apply to business problems.
Yeah, for sure.
And I like that application, actually. I mean, so I have kids as well. They're 9 and 11, but I've gone through that pain point of daycare and there's probably a lot of, like you said, better mousetrap. There's probably a lot of different opportunities and like systems out there, but one central place to sort of probably run and manage all of this from the side of both a daycare owner, you know, a provider, and then also, you know, information to the parents as soon as possible with regards to what your kids are doing and anything that happens to them during the day is very important. I remember when I dropped my kids off both times, it's such an interesting experience handing your kid over to somebody that's, you know, been with you for, you know, oftentimes, you know, it depends, you know, sometimes they bring the child in and it's only been 6 months. Sometimes it's, they've been with the child for years and to hand them over to somebody and walk away. There's a lot of trust there.
Yeah. It's a real scary thought. And so that's kind of the whole idea is, you know, yes, there are other solutions on the market for it, but the solutions have not been, you know, tailored to really what parents want and what daycare owners are looking for. It's more so by larger companies that have made a lot of assumptions. And so, you know, we get to do a lot of different cool things. And because of the technology that we use at work and stuff that I get experience with, you know, we get to do all the cool stuff. So, you know, like we get to integrate with Stripe. We get to use WebSockets for group chats. As teachers move between classrooms, it'll automatically bring them out of the old group chats for the old students and stick them in with the new ones. We can offer multiple location support for organizations, and you can move teachers and students and families in between locations if you need to. You know, there's all the little things have been thought of.
That's awesome. So sounds like it's not publicly available yet.
Not quite yet. We are doing our closed alpha here in the fall. We're hoping for Halloween. And then we're planning on doing our beta with our first two locations at the beginning of the year. So we're hoping for a full launch, like probably Q2 next year.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's exciting. Super exciting. And we'll have links to all the other stuff that you and I talked about, but you know, there are links in the transcript of this and during in the show liner notes. So more than happy to promote it. If you had a website open or if there's anything you want to let me know either now or about it, I will definitely mention it.
I do have an Instagram handle. It's the Cubby app. It doesn't have any followers or posts yet. I just grabbed the handle. And then I've also got a LinkedIn account, the Cubby. And then I have made a simple marketing site. It does work. You can email us if you've got questions, if you want to get on the list, and that is thecubbyapp.com.
Nice. Cool. I love it. Yeah. And so, you know, bringing AI obviously into this can essentially speed up, I think, a lot of the work, like you said, on both sides, that the people that are providing the care and help parents. I see some great applications. It sounds like a lot of fun. And it sounds like it probably, yeah, it kind of scratches your itch, I guess, for always sort of staying up to date and working on new things, sort of bringing new technology in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to close the loop on your conference that I went to earlier this spring, you know, one of my big takeaways from that is all the different applications that you can use, right? And so one of the ideas that hit me for one of the things that we'll be building in the future will be video recordings. So we'll be able to link with the cameras in the different classrooms and stuff like that. And one of the things that I want to do is build an AI model that will automatically blur the faces of everyone.
Sure, sure. Privacy. Yeah, I'm just thinking, yeah. I mean, if you don't have people's consent, they can't really be on camera. So
right. And especially with minors and things like that. Yeah. So
yeah,
that'll be a really exciting feature to be able to build.
I just got in my inbox. I think, you know, they've selected people. Are you familiar with Mini Demo?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So there's actually an event that happens. I think it's going to be happening in a week or so. They do it, I want to say at least once a year, maybe even twice a year, but it's all a part of Minibar, this organization that does conferences, you know, and actually the larger organization is Ministar. And then there's sort of free conferences. They just did one May at Best Buy. And that's an event called Minibar. And so anyways, long story short is they actually have another thing that they do called Mini Demo, and people can get up. They basically get like 2 minutes to demo their product in front of the local sort of scene here, but it's all video recorded. It's actually awesome publicity. That might be a goal for you guys to look at, you know, once you go full launch. Talk to Andrew about it. I'm sure he knows about it, but it's a great platform. So it's a great place. And you always see some really, really cool stuff. So if you don't even present or show your product, I'd highly recommend just even attending. So we'll put some links to Minibar as well. But
yeah, I appreciate that recommendation.
When it comes to artificial intelligence, how would you define it? You know, if you were in the elevator with somebody, do you have a short sort of definition of how you would define AI?
Oh, I don't know if I have a short definition for anything.
Okay.
that's one of my weaknesses is that I'm too long-winded. You know, I think the first question is I would ask is, you know, in reference to what, you know, what's the application, right? So it just kind of depends. You know, we can use AI to do things like anomaly detection, where you give it a bunch of data and you say, okay, find what doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
You can build a large language model, which at the end of the day is just a really fancy text prediction engine.
Yep.
We can do things like doing time series plots over time and checking for drift. I mean, it just kind of depends. I don't know that there is one abstract definition for AI, right? The definition for it is that it's the application of machine learning, right?
And there's no right or wrong answer in this. It's just always, I just love to get people's inputs and thoughts on it. And then sort of the follow-up question in a lot of ways, because it's such a, I guess it's just sort of a mysterious term, right? I mean, AI has been around since the 50s, right? People were thinking about computers and these machines being able to be intelligent, right? And now is the point where, you know, you can fool people. You don't even know, you know, you're basically chatting with somebody online and it's absolutely artificial intelligence. And so now, you know, what does AI then mean to not only our businesses, but our life? And I guess the follow-up question I'd like to ask then is, so how do you see this affecting, you know, somebody, say your kids, you know, once they, you know, grow up and they're 18, 20 years old or whatever, like, how do you see the world being different in particular, maybe around what you, like your line of business? So as a full stack engineer, how do you see it sort of changing the way that you work?
Sure. That's such a tough question. You know, my wife and I were just talking about this the other day. If you would have asked me even 2 years ago about what the best field would be to get into, I would have said it's, you know, computer science, software engineering. And I'm not saying I disagree with that statement at this point, but goodness, it's scary. It's scary to see the power of it. You know, so in my daily tooling, I use Copilot. I use Copilot X. And so I get access to GPT-4. That is the foundation that has GitHub's fine tune on top of it. And so, you know, just seeing what it can do for the little things like when I don't remember the one liner to auto capitalize the first letter in a sentence, things like that. And then being able to contextually ask things like highlight this code and say, hey, what does this do? Or hey, what's the time and space complexity of this? And hey, can you optimize this and things like that? And what I've found in experience is that those tools aren't there yet. They try, but they're not quite there yet. And really what they require is, you know, iterative learning and like babysitting, right? It's like, hey, do this and then let me know when you're ready. And then, okay, we're going to take what you did there and then we're going to apply it here and, you know, things like that. And so I think that really the future of software engineering is going to be working with AI and, you know, doing things like, you know, one of the popular programs or not programs, one of the popular problems that was discussed on the ChatGPT subreddit a while ago is that ChatGPT can't count. You know, if you give it a prompt and tell it to write a sentence where each word starts with the letter A and there are 15 words in the sentence, it can't do it. You know, it'll go 13, 13, 13, 16, and it'll try over and over again. And eventually it'll give up because it'll reach the token max and whatever. Sure. But anyways, I looked at that and after a couple of hours and looking at it, I was really curious. And so I decided to give it a shot and I ended up teaching it recursion. Basically, I was able to get it and I was able to test it with four different words and four different sentence lengths. And after teaching it the recursion, I was able to get it to do it before I ran out of context. I really think that's where the future is and just understanding what it's doing, what it is, and that it's not a person. It can't think. And you are still doing the executive thought and the problem solving. And this is really just, you know, it's the 21st century version of a calculator, right?
Yeah, sure. So understanding its limitations and sort of having, like, helping it where it needs help and using it to help you where you need help.
Exactly.
I like that idea of, yeah, basically working with AI. It sounds like you're not too worried about seeing it sort of replace our jobs here anytime soon.
No, not from what I've seen, you know, at least not what I do. For the people who make static sites all day long, you know, and the people who do little simple coding and get paid for it, I may be more concerned, but the people who develop complex custom applications for specific needs, I don't think that those jobs are going anywhere.
Well, good. And so the other thing I like to ask people also too is like, you know, if you were just getting into this field, so maybe rewind back a year or so, I'm not sure when you finished your boot camp, but imagine we're coming out of boot camp today and you wanted to start learning about AI. What are some interesting sites? You mentioned Reddit. Are there other places that you go to maybe find the information on AI?
You know, Reddit is a big hub for me as far as news goes and stuff like that. I guess that speaks however that needs to speak, whether it's good or bad, but you know, aside from that, sort of the things that I like to do are Free Code Camp and stuff like that. There's a lot of good information on there. As far as AI specifically, I guess I haven't found a good home for what to learn next, what to try next, what to do next. You know, what I find myself doing is going and checking the OpenAI docs and seeing, okay, what was in their latest update and, you know, looking at the community forums there and being like, okay, well, what are people building? What sort of questions do people have? And, you know, things like that. And then as far as from a learning aspect, I think if I were doing this fresh out of school or just even going into school, I think I would pursue machine learning and probably get my master's in it.
I understand a lot of the algorithms that happen underneath the covers.
Just because there's so much that goes into it, the complexity of it and having that structure, I think, would really just be beneficial to getting a well-rounded knowledge in it. You know, there's so much to know and it's changing so fast.
Yeah. Part of this podcast here is really just giving a platform for people to sort of talk about AI and their perspective on it. We have a lot of people that have PhDs, I guess, in machine learning and AI that come on this podcast, but then also people that are just interested. So I'm really trying to build sort of a platform here with, you know, the conference. We have our monthly meetup that we do. We just did a really interesting hands-on workshop this past weekend focused on specifically GPT and building your own chatbot. So Applied AI is a space for people to go to, but you're right. The AI thing is like, it's so spread out, you know, everywhere. Everyone's got their own sort of different take on it as well.
Yeah, I think that's great, you know, and I think it's great to get everybody's different perspective on it. And I think the big thing here is just uncovering the blinds, so to speak, right? To say, you know, this isn't some big scary thing. This just is what it is and everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you can't believe all the news hype. So how do people reach out and connect with you?
You know, LinkedIn is a great way. You can also reach out to me via email, either my work email, seth@hypercolor.com, or you can do seth@thecubbyapp.com.
Cool. Okay.
Excuse me, that was seth@hypercolordigital.com.
Digital.com. Okay. Yeah, we'll make sure that it's in the liner notes. Are there any other, I guess, projects or other things that you wanted to talk about today, I guess, around AI that maybe I didn't cover? As I said, a lot of this is just conversations on applied AI. So it's just really, hey, let's just sort of talk about what's going on in your perspective around AI. But often I just ask people, is there anything that maybe I didn't touch on that you wanted to talk about?
Sure. No, I think we got everything. You know, I was excited to talk about the chatbot and the spam detection thing that Andrew is doing. Those are our big active players right now. You know, we do have some other things going, but I can't really talk too much about that with NDAs and stuff like that. So it's great to be in the space. It's good to talk about. It's fun to be in a space where you can talk to other people about it without feeling like you're having to explain every step of it. And, you know.
Well, I'm glad you attended the Applied AI conference that we had back in May. We'll be having one again this fall. And I guess one of the benefits of living in the Twin Cities, I guess, is being able to engage with people face-to-face at some of these Applied AI events. So look forward to seeing you at future things, Seth. Wish you and your family nothing but the best, I guess. And, you know, it sounds like you're active, like very, very active with regards to sort of building new technology, which I just love to see. It's one of these things where a rising tide lifts all boats. And I really love to see people just getting out in the community and building things and testing things out and trying them and applying whatever they can to it. So good luck and best wishes going forward.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had a blast. Thank you.
You've listened to another episode of the Conversations on Applied AI podcast. We hope you are eager to learn more about applying artificial intelligence and deep learning within your organization. You can visit us at appliedai.mn to keep up to date on our events and connect with our amazing community. Please don't hesitate to reach out to Justin at appliedai.mn if you are interested in participating in a future episode. Thank you for listening.